Genesis chapter 12, we begin looking at Abraham, as he's called here at the beginning of his time, Abram. If you remember at the end of chapter 11, we talked a little bit about the city that he came from, Ur of the Chaldees, and you can see it right over here on this side of the map at the end of this red line, and that's where his family was from. They've done archaeological digs and found the things that we talked about last week about the city there and the civilization, much more advanced than some people would have thought that a civilization at that time would have been, certainly more so than some of the skeptics who didn't even believe that by the time of Moses they would have known how to write, and yet they did. Even they have found documents of shipping and other commerce from that era at the time of which Abraham would have lived, and even found the name Abram or Abraham on things, which was apparently not a totally uncommon name at that time. But as we look at Genesis chapter 12 tonight, we notice that God said to Abram, "Get out of your country and from your kindred and from your father's house to a land I will show you." Now God tells Abram to leave three things. He says he wants him to leave his nation, his country. He wants him to leave his relatives, that's his extended family, but also his father's house. And if Abram does this, if he'll do what God tells him to do, God has some blessings in store for him. He's going to show him a land that he's going to give him. But more than that, in verse 2, we see some of the other blessings that God is promising to give Abram if he'll do what God has told him to do. He says, "I will make you a great nation. I will bless you, make your name great, and you shall be a blessing." Verse 3 says, "And I will bless them that bless you, and curse him that curses you, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed." So we have here three things he's supposed to leave behind, but he's going to get far more than that. He's going to get a lot more blessings than the losses that he's going to sustain. God always works that way. When he asks us to leave something, to give up something, the promise of the blessing that we'll receive is always greater than what we have to give up or what we have to lose. Sometimes, however, we want to hold on too much to what we've already got, and we're afraid to let go of it, maybe because we don't trust God to give us the thing he's promised, but for whatever reason, often we will fail to do that. So remember, Abram was from Ur. He had lived there most of his life, but at some point his father, Terah, had taken him and Sarai and Lot, and they had traveled all the way up here to Haran. And so that's where Abram is living at the time of Genesis chapter 12. And in verse number 4 then, it says that Abram departed. So they had lived in Haran there until after Terah had died. And Abram departs from his father's house and from his, well, most of his relatives. He takes Lot with him. He's not fully committed himself to following God all the way. He left his country, he left some of his relatives, left his father's house, but he takes some of the relatives with him. He's done 2 out of 3. Well, guess what? As long as he's only done 2 out of 3, God's not bound to give him the blessing he promised. But how many times do we work that way? God makes promises that if we'll be faithful, we'll be obedient to him, then he'll give us these certain blessings, but we want to do 2 out of 3 and still expect to get the blessings of God. It doesn't work that way. We've got to go all the way. God has promised that he's going to act through Abram to bring a blessing on the whole world. But what we're going to see here in chapter 12 is that at this point in time, that is not happening. God's not blessing the world through Abraham. In fact, Abraham is causing problems for the rest of the world. In chapter 5, they come to the land of Canaan. Now, I know there are some cities on here on the map, like Jerusalem here, and there's Gaza here, and we may be familiar with those. There's the Dead Sea there, and the Sea of Galilee even up in here. And so we're somewhat familiar with this area. But there was no Jerusalem at the time of Abraham. That comes much later. So some of these towns that are on here were not by that name at the time that Abram came. But this would have been the area of Canaan here. This is the area that the Israelites would later conquer, that his descendants would come and get. And Abram entered Canaan coming in from the north as he comes down into the land. By this time, the Canaanites were already there, the descendants of Canaan, the son of Ham, were the Canaanites. And some of them were already in the land. How many of them, how big of a nation they were? Was it more than one nation already? But we don't know for sure at the time of Abraham. Certainly later, after the children of Israel come out of Egypt, there are all bunches of them. They're Jebusites and Perizzites and Amalekites and all sorts of ites. And yet, at this time, all we hear is the Canaanite was in the land. In verse number 7, we find the Lord appearing to Abraham. Now, that's a very interesting thing. Not sure exactly what form the Lord took when he appeared to Abram. We know that he appeared to Moses one time in the form of burning bush. We know later on in chapter 18 he's going to appear to Abram in the form of a human person, a man. But not sure here what form he took when he appeared to Abram. But he appears and he promises, as Abram has now entered into this land, God reminds him, remember I told you I'm going to show you this land. He said, this is the land that I'm going to give your descendants. I'm going to give it. Now, remember, Abraham's 75 years old at this point. He doesn't have any children yet. God's promising to give this land to Abram's descendants, and Abram doesn't even have any descendants yet. But that doesn't stop God. God knows the future. God's power is not limited to the here and now. God can work tomorrow and next week and next year and hundreds of years down the road. And often He does work that way. The mistake that we make is thinking that all of God's blessings are going to be physical, material, temporal blessings that are going to happen to me right here and right now. But that's not the way it works. God's blessings don't work that way. And they never have. Of course, Abram builds an altar. And he worships God there. It's interesting, in verse 8, he stops another place east of Bethel, which Bethel was just a little further north here than Jerusalem, right around Shechem here in that area. And as he stops there, he builds another altar. Notice he's going further south as he goes. And the Bible even tells us there that he is continuing to travel southward. He's going south. Verse 9, it says that he goes further south. He continued traveling south. He's still looking. And so he's made quite a travel in his lifetime for somebody of that day and age. Of course, you notice that this huge area here is a desert. And so instead of traveling across the desert, they had traveled up here and around. And so we see the path that he took. You notice also, in addition to the red line, there's also a green line that shows where Eleazar went when he went back to Haran from where Abram was living to go get Isaac a wife. There's also the yellow line, that explains where Jacob went when he had to flee from Esau because Esau was going to kill him and had to go back to Rebekah's brother Laban. And so those are those other, the green and yellow lines there as well. But he continues to go south, and he goes down all the way into Egypt. Now, you notice there's a red dotted line here, because we don't really know exactly where in Egypt he goes. There are no cities named. It just says that he went to Egypt and apparently went to whatever was at that time the center of the government, because he saw Pharaoh at the time. And so most people have assumed that that would have been Nah, which is now Memphis, Egypt, at this time. So that's the idea, the general area that he went. But it's interesting. I want us to take a little break here and notice something about the Bible. There are several ways that we learn things from the Bible. We learn by a direct command that we are to do something. We learn information by a direct statement. We see things by an approved example that, hey, this is okay for me to do because the person in the Bible did it and God approved of it when they did it. And of course, then we have to weigh out whether that was the Mosaical law or patriarchal law, or was that the law of Christ, and those things. Well, we consider those things. But there's a third way that we learn from the Bible, and it's called necessary implication. You've probably heard it mentioned before. But I want us to notice something here. In verse number 10 of chapter 12, you might want to mark that verse because it's a very interesting verse, even though it doesn't seem so interesting. It says, there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. Now, who does it say went down to Egypt? Well, it says Abram did. Well, look at verse 11. It came to pass when he was come near to enter into Egypt that he said unto Sarai his wife, behold, I know that you are a fair woman to look upon. Okay, well, now we know Sarai was with him as he was going. I want us to think about something and notice something. If you want to mark chapter 13 and verse 1, in chapter 13 and verse 1 it says, Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. That would be the south part of Canaan. Did you notice something significant about that verse? It says that Lot came up out of Egypt. $50 to the person that can find the verse in the Bible that says Lot went down into Egypt. It doesn't say that. We learn by necessary implication. If Lot was with Abram before he went down into Egypt, and Lot was with Abram when he came up out of Egypt, then guess what? Lot must have gone down into Egypt. There's no other explanation. Now, did he go at the same time as Abram? That's the most likely. That's not absolutely necessary. He could have gone earlier or later, possibly. Not likely, but possibly. But we know he went down there because you can't come out of a place that you didn't go down into. And that's the way necessary implication works. There is a teaching that cannot be false. It must be true that Lot went down into Egypt. It has to be true because he came up out of Egypt. Now, in the case of Lot and Abram and going to Egypt and coming back from Egypt, it's not a matter of our salvation whether we know that or not, which is why it makes it a perfect example to illustrate the point, because people won't argue that one. They'll say, oh, well, yeah, he had to... Later on, there are things that are taught by necessary implication that are very important to what we have to do to be saved. And so we need to recognize that particular teaching. Well, that's an interesting thing. I wonder why that decided to do that. I didn't do that. I don't know why that did that. That's cute, though. I guess it's on a timer of some sort. Have it pause there. Well, we're about done with it anyway. So Abram went down into Egypt, and he came back up into the southern part of Canaan later on. I just wanted to point out that about the necessary implication, because that's so important for us to understand how the Bible works and how we can learn from the Bible. even things that are not specifically mentioned, sometimes those things must be true. We can't help but have them be a statement of truth. It's interesting here. You wonder. God's promised, I'm going to give you this land, but then there's a famine, there's some hardship. And so Abram leaves. He goes to Egypt instead of staying in that land God promises that He's going to give him. Is Abraham fully trusting God at this point? Well, I think as we read along there, we'll see that he's really not. Notice we read that Sarai was with him, and he said to his wife, I know you're a fair woman to look at. Now realize, by this time, she's at least 65 years old. And yet he says, you're a pretty woman. Well, a lot of you ladies like to think you're still attractive, even when you do get to be 65. I know none of you are there yet. You're still 29 and holding, right? But Abram believes that his wife, at over 65 years old, is so attractive that the Egyptians are going to kill him and take her away from him. Wow. Abram doesn't have much faith in his fellow man, does he? He doesn't think very highly of the moral standards of this nation that he's headed to visit. And so he says to Sarai, I want you to say you're my sister instead of my wife. Don't say you're my wife, because they'll kill me and they'll keep you alive. Is Abram being a very good husband here? Is Abram trusting God here? I know we call Abram, he's known as the father of the faithful, isn't he? You know, the people talk about Father Abraham, and he was, you know, it was by faith, and he was so faithful to God. But you know, it didn't start out that way. He had to grow in his faith and trust in the Lord. And all of us can learn from him. We need to grow in our faith and trust in the Lord as well. We look at this situation here and just think. Seems a little self-centered, doesn't it? I mean, he's willing to sacrifice his wife's virtue to save his own neck. That's the man's supposed to protect the wife, not offer her up for the slaughter, so to speak. But no, Abraham, he's worried about his own neck. Not exactly her knight in shining armor, is he? And what about this man who's supposed to be trusting God? Supposed to be following God? Is he trusting God? Does he not trust that God, who has already promised him, I'm going to give this land to your descendants, and you don't have any descendants yet, is God going to let you die before he fulfills his promise? Abraham's not showing a lot of faith here, is he? He's showing, in fact, a great lack of faith in this circumstance. He's even willing not only to sacrifice his wife's virtue, so to speak, but he also encourages her to commit sin. He encourages her to lie. Not exactly the kind of godly example that we would want to follow. And yet, an evidence that the Bible was written by God and not by man. Man has a tendency to do one of two things. Either point out all the good and ignore the bad, or point out all the bad and ignore the good. But God's balanced. He just tells it like it is. This is what happened. Doesn't matter that Abram later is going to be called the father of the faithful. At this point, he wasn't being faithful like he should have. At this point, he wasn't doing what he should. And we need to learn from that example. God's not going to cover up for us. He's not going to paint over it and gloss over it. If we do wrong, he's going to tell that part of it too. It's going to be a part of the record in his books that he keeps. Abram was right about one thing. Sarah apparently was either very beautiful or the Egyptian women were very ugly, because the first thing they noticed was how beautiful she was. They noticed it so quickly that they soon had given word to the Pharaoh, the king of the land, that this beautiful woman has come to town. And so Pharaoh took her into his house with the intention of making her one of his wives. Well, God punished Pharaoh for that. So here's Pharaoh. He takes her into house, believing she's his sister. He doesn't know that that's another man's wife. He does it innocently, naively, believing that she's fair game, that she's a free woman to take as a wife. And he even treats Abram kindly in verse number 16 because of Sarai. I mean, you know, hey, here's your sister. I want to marry her. Here, why don't you have a nice place to stay? Here's some cattle. Here's some... He blesses Abraham in that way because he's going to get him a wife. But God punishes Pharaoh's house because he took a man's wife. Didn't I tell you Abraham wasn't going to be a blessing in this chapter? Abraham's not blessing the nation of Israel at all. He's bringing down a curse on them because he's not fully trusting and following the Lord. And we do the same thing. If we don't fully trust and follow the Lord, we will not bring blessings to those around us. If we'll fully follow and trust the Lord, then we can bring a blessing to those around us. Now, of course, the blessing that God spoke of, ultimately, we're going to find is Jesus Christ. Salvation is going to come through the lineage of Abraham. But at this point, certainly, God did say, anyone who blesses you, I'll bless them. Anybody who curses you, I'll curse them. But here in this case, Abram is causing problems for Pharaoh. Now here's a dangerous situation. We learn something from Pharaoh here. When you believe a lie, it doesn't matter how sincere you are or how innocently you believed that lie, you can still suffer some pretty severe consequences from believing that lie. Pharaoh believed the lie that Sarai was Abram's sister. And it brought a plague on his house and on him because he believed a lie. We need to watch out. Lies are powerful things. And we can't go along with those who say, well, as long as you're sincere. Well, sincerity doesn't make a lie true. The lie is still just as damaging, even if the person believed it sincerely. Well, Pharaoh, realizing why he is suffering, confronts Abram and says, take your wife, get out of here, leave us alone. Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why would you do this to me? Well, Abram did it because he was trusting his own devices, his own wisdom, rather than leaning on the Lord's understanding, leaning on the truth and trusting in God. And we get ourselves into trouble that way too. When we don't trust God and instead think we can figure a way out of it, it gets us into trouble. But Abraham had seriously underestimated the Egyptians' morality, or at least Pharaoh's, because I have to say, if Pharaoh had really been as bad a fellow as Abram thought he was, then certainly after he found out that the guy had lied to him, caused his house to suffer a plague, he surely would have killed him then. But Pharaoh didn't do that. Pharaoh sent him away. He said, you get out of here. I don't want you around here. Leave my country. But he didn't kill him. And I dare say a lot of folks would have thought him justified if he had. But he didn't. He sends them on their way and in fact commanded everyone else concerning them. Leave them alone, let them go. Abraham is going to grow in his faith in the Lord. He's going to grow in his trust and his obedience and other things as well. But he's not there yet. But you know, for all of us that also aren't perfect, for all of us who have times where we don't trust like we should, where we don't have the faith that we should, where we try to figure out our own way instead of doing things the Lord's way, let this be a reminder to us. Let this be an encouragement to us that even the father of the faithful, even Abraham, the friend of God, the chosen one, the one who was going to bring a blessing to the whole world, even he had times where he didn't live up to God's standards. The question is, when we don't live up to God's standards, what do we do? Do we learn from those mistakes and grow and do better next time? Or do we keep making the same mistakes over and over again? Maybe you've fallen into the trap that Abram did of thinking, well, I'll do it my way this time. I know God said do this or do that, but I just don't know how that'll turn out. I've got to do it this other way. I can't. That's too dangerous. Something bad could happen. We need to correct our thinking. If you need to respond to the invitation tonight because perhaps you haven't had the faith in the Lord that you should have had, maybe you have some other need, some other area in your life where you've fallen short. Whatever the case may be, if you have a need to respond to the invitation tonight, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.